9 years ago, the first commentary I presented identified two competing approaches to economics, personified by then-Fed Chair Alan Greenspan, a free market true believer, and the late John Kenneth Galbraith, a strong supporter of government action to fight unemployment and poverty. Because I am focusing today's commentary on the current remilitarization of our foreign policy, I now realize that I had oversimplified the differences between those two. Greenspan, for example, is not a consistent small government libertarian. In a recent speech, he noted approvingly that at the end of the Cold War, our country used its military advantages to act as the world's policeman. Because of Russia's recent actions in Ukraine and the rise of the so-called Islamic State, Greenspan believes that military spending will now have to increase. When it comes to the American empire, his desire for a small, non-obtrusive government apparently goes out the window. Galbraith, a big government liberal, was one of the earliest critics of the war in Vietnam. Were he alive today, he would be opposing the Obama administration's re-escalation of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, while Greenspan would implicitly cheer them on. Between 1965 and 1973, it took protest, civil disobedience, civil disorder, insurgent political campaigns, punctuated, unfortunately, by the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy and the police riot at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, and virtual rebellion in the armed forces before the American people forced an end to the Vietnam War. And here we are again with a so-called war on terror that has been going on for over 13 years. Don't get me wrong. As I noted in a previous commentary, the Islamic State is a disgusting bunch of terrorists who are severely oppressing the people who are unlucky enough to be living in territory they control. However, using the U.S. military to police the world has almost never worked out the way we want it to. When the war against terrorism began in 2001, we had one enemy, Al-Qaeda, with a handful of people under arms hiding in the mountains of Afghanistan. 13 years later, that war has cost 4,600 American lives and countless others from other nations, and close to $4 trillion. There are mini al-Qaedas all over the world, Nigeria and Kenya and Yemen, for example, while the Taliban remains undefeated in Afghanistan and the Islamic State is making mincemeat of the Iraqi army we created after 2003. Meanwhile, much of the money we have spent has found its way into the deep pockets of war profiteers. Journalist James Ryson, in his new book, claims that the private beneficiaries of these expenditures have received the largest transfer of public funds to private wealth in American history. True libertarians, unlike Greenspan, oppose expenditures to keep the world safe for American oil corporations. And many big government liberals like Galbraith carefully distinguish between government expenditures that help the people, investing in high-speed rail and alternative energy, for example, and those that waste lives and treasure to benefit a handful. I've said this before in other commentaries, but it bears repeating again. A giant empire may not be very good for a country and its people, but it sure helps enrich a privileged few. The tragedy is that even in a democratic country like ours, it is always very difficult to overcome the fear that drives ordinary people to support a militarized foreign policy. In the Vietnam case, it was the fear of communists gaining a foothold in Vietnam and then ending up in California. Today, there are actually politicians who claim that the Islamic State is poised to come across the Texas border, bringing Ebola as a weapon of mass destruction. We need to get a grip and not succumb to such idiocy. We need a revival of the anti-war movements of the 1960s and 1970s.